You're listening to the Slow Ride Podcast. Bikes, advice, and rumors straight from the source. TheSlowRidePodcast.com and on Twitter at TheSlowRidePod. Enjoy the ride.
Hello and welcome to episode 474 of the Slow Ride Podcast. This is Tim in Orlando.
Hey, this is Matt in the city, beautiful Minneapolis. Hopefully I sound somewhat normal.
Well, you do. It was a made for an even longer plane flight when I was listening to the podcast last week.
Good.
Spencer is not joining us this week, so it's just double trouble. And I think of the 473 episodes of this podcast that we've done, little guy, probably less than five is just me and you.
Hasn't been many, and I think most of the ones is just you and me. It's been like special. I think it's been the specials, like the
flawless,
like the book ones, and like the spinoffs.
Like the higher brow, smarter ones. You know,
yeah, like, it was all definitely like literary reviews and
like
reviews
way up in the ivory tower.
For sure.
So here we are. Let's get right to it. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about was that the women's Strada Bianchi.
Yes.
This with Lotta Kopecky winning.
Yeah.
I liked it because the race was a little bit longer and there was more gravel sections than in years past. And okay, it was more of a race than what we got on the men's side. So
I just felt that race.
And we'll talk about the men's race
in
a second, but I think the women's race deserves a lot of credit because Lotta Kopecky like put the hammer down over Borghini, and it was a race. I guess I felt like it was more of a race that was entertaining than the epic proportions that we saw on the men's side, and it deserves quite a bit of credit. Now, you may remember that Strada Bianchi last year was a little bit more controversial, right? Because last year was when we had a little bit of the infighting when Demi Vollering took the win over Lotta Kopecky. So Kopecky wins it in 2022 and attacked by a teammate. And then
they went head to head. I mean, I would categorize it as a fair fight, and they duked it out. But this year,
I want to make it a thing.
Okay, you can stand on that.
Make it a thing.
Yep, make it a thing.
And and Vollering a distant third place, maybe learned her lesson when battling the world champ.
I mean, you could spin it that way. I guess you could spin it the way that Vollering was in the second group and played the perfect teammate, disrupting the second group, and then like made Faulkner and Cassione Adoma do a ton of work, and then pipped him in the sprint, dropped them all, and won the sprint for third. And so Vollering was the perfect teammate, and obviously, after people seen what Vollering did last year beating Kopecky, like nobody wanted to bring Vollering to the line that much either, right? Like, what are you going to do? You're going to chase down Kopecky so you can have Vollering beat you?
Anyways, it was a lot of fun to watch. And I know the couple of the extra laps, or what was it, like two more laps or one more lap?
Yeah, it was a little bit
near
longer.
The end.
It was good.
I know that friend of the pod, Abby Mickey, has the review up. But from when I went back and watched Strada Bianca, I really enjoyed the Dawn version. Dawn?
Dawn-A?
The women's race?
I have no idea.
Because I figured most people would come to this podcast expecting us just to talk about what Pogacar did.
Well, we'll talk about
like kilometer 79.8. But it was pretty cool to see.
I want to say, if folks, you know, go over to the Escape Collective and read Abby's write-up on the women's race at Strada. If she wrote one about the men's race, I think it would just be one word capitalized and a bunch of exclamation points. We'll get into that. But I slightly disagree with her point. She made it said like that Longobardini couldn't have done anything else against Capecchi. I kind of felt like watching the last couple K, she pulled a little bit too much. Like, you knew Capecchi was going to jump her on the steep gradients. And I know she wanted to stay away. I know she wanted to at least get second. And I know Vollering was in that next group. I kind of feel like she needed to play it a little cagier. I feel like took a few too many pulls for my liking, where going into the city and up the climbs, I was like, you're gonna get hit. Like, Capecchi's gonna hit you with one huge attack. And I don't know. I thought she could have played it a little more cagier toward the end there.
Yeah.
Played it safe.
Yeah.
You know, you got to take your chance in the moment. I'm totally Monday morning quarterbacking it, but I don't know. Especially with Capecchi, I just feel like, you know, there's one monster acceleration in there that's just going to, it's going to be full lights out. Not that other people didn't try to attack. I don't, you know, whatever. I'm Monday morning quarterbacking it. Anyway, it was a good race. It was super fun. It's totally worth a rewatch, at least the last like chunk of it. Like a lot of good stuff. And like always, all these big women's races, you get these groups of just pure stars. Like all the stars of the sport are right there, you know. It's solid.
Whereas on the men's side, you didn't get the big group of stars. You got a single superstar attacking with 79.8 or 80 kilometers to go.
Yeah.
Just acting like, the rain was coming. So I had to put the old hammer down.
He called it, man.
Yeah, he did.
He called it.
And he won by Tadej Pogačar, wins by 2 minutes and 45 seconds over friend of the pod, Tom Skunes.
Holy cow. What a podium. So proud, so amazed. So I feel so
Tom's,
like, oh my God.
Bravo.
Like 1 degree of separation. Oh my God. I was bouncing around the house with excitement. Amazing.
Thrilled.
So thrilled.
Thrilled with, and what a day for Latvia, by the way.
Yeah.
Do you see who got 16th?
What?
See who got 16th?
Oh, Chris Nealon. Yeah. In 16th.
Chris Nealon's also from Latvia. There you go. I mean, wow. So pretty great to see Tom Skunes with second place, and then Maxim Van Gils of Lotto Destiny taking the third spot on the podium with Pidcock and Maddie Morich, 4-5.
Yeah.
And Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
Taking sixth place.
I didn't realize seventh place. We're early enough in the season where I was watching it and I was like, why is David Formolo wearing a Movistar kit? Because I didn't realize he'd switch teams. Good for him, getting a little more freedom to roam over at Movistar.
Definitely going to have a little bit more freedom. Now, on the men's race, what stuck out to you, little guy? And how are we supposed to talk about Strade Bianche moving forward?
How are we supposed to talk about? Well, obviously, we had the usual run into Strade in the press, which is, everyone, is it a monument? Is it not a monument? Blah, 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 blah. And they added some extra kids.
That seems like just filler. Like, it seems that, oh man, I don't have something to write about this week, so we're just going to call this a monument or not a monument. And you're just like, it isn't a monument. There's already a sixth monument. Get in line.
I'm going to nominate it for the seventh monument, and here's why I'm going to say it's a monument. I feel like you got to start the season and end the season with a monument. Like, that's where you really feel like you're starting it. And as much as opening weekend is Belgium, it's a big start, it's not a monument. It used to feel like Milan-San Remo, you started with a monument. That was your first monument. And that would coincide with the first bout of warm weather here in the Northern Hemisphere, where you'd watch that big first race and you'd really get out and ride your bike. Now, we got global warming. It's 69 degrees today in Minneapolis. It was in the first week of March.
It's still going to snow.
It's still going to snow, but it's been in the 60s. So I'm currently experiencing the weather that 10, 15 years ago we would maybe almost start experiencing when we would watch Milan-San Remo. And now that I get that during Strade, I feel like that is nature's way of saying that the Strade is a monument, because you got to start with a monument.
So favor of climate change.
I'm not in favor of it,
global warming.
If it's here, I will say that it has nominated Strata to be a monument. The other thing that stood out to me, other than Tom's just being a freaking champion, man, you're on the podium at Strata. It's so awesome. The thing that struck out to me after the race, kind of more actually, was looking that Maxim Van Gils from Lotto got third. And I was looking at his results, and he's been first, fifth, third, and third in three races he's done this year. And then I was like, oh, he's out of contract at the end of the year. He's only 24. Lotto also, Leonard Van, whatever the guy's name is, who just won the UA Tour, got 11th at Strada, won a race earlier in the year. 22, also out of contract at the end of the year. Florian Vermeers, who was on their team, 24, also out of contract at the end of the year, who got podiumed at Roubaix a couple years ago. Andres Krohn, 25, also out of contract at the end of the year. And the only of their riders who scores any points ever is Arnaud Delis, who's like they actually signed. But this race actually prompted me to look at Lotto Dynasty and realize that if they don't get those contract renewals up pretty quick with their young guys who are tearing up the spring, like, they don't have a team soon. Like, they're already hanging on a thread if they don't make it through.
Maybe they know they already don't have a team. Like, maybe the team is about to fold. They're the number, what are they, the number 8
team? Looking through their roster, and it was like, if they don't sign a couple of these young guys who are all expiring soon, because there's been a lot of teams already, like, renewing people like early in the season. I feel like there's been a lot of renewals of like people who are still under contract, but I sign them up early. I'm like, Lotto being in that, they're not going to get back to the pro tour unless they score some points, and all their sport, they've got all these young guys who are like coming into form, but like they're all coming into form as their contracts are expiring. It made me nervous for Lotto Destiny.
Do we have any relegation coming up?
We will after this next. This year, next year, it'll be reassessed, and then...
Because they're not a World Tour team.
They're not, and they're out, and they're currently in a position where they're getting the invites, but they're not going to be if they keep dropping down points. And, like, they're sort of on that tenuous edge of not getting the good invites. And they have Delis, and they have these couple good young guys, and, like, looking at their roster, it's like, De Gendt is retiring soon, Campenaerts is getting older, and then it's these couple young guys who are scoring and like scoring points, and if they don't sign these dudes, like, I don't see how this team isn't like a third division team soon. Like, they lost Wellens, like they've lost a lot of guys, and I'm just kind of baffled that they haven't re-signed, especially like the Leonard and Maxim, who are two guys who have been like pretty good young guys, but are like literally so far this year can't seem to finish out of the top 10 and are like hitting that moment of like, oh, these guys are actually legit. It's like, man, sign them immediately. Sign them. Like, don't mess around with Lotto. They got nothing else.
Well, maybe if they got a better jersey, then people would want to start racing for them. It's an atrocious kit. It was kind of embarrassing to see it on the podium.
Yeah, it's not the best. I don't even, did one of us?
Tom's was stealing the show in that podium shot.
Oh, I mean, of course, that little kit, that little Trek kit is amazing. Yeah.
So, man. Well, that's there's a big weekend. So congratulations again to Lotta Kopecky and Tadej Pogacar for dominating wins in their own special ways. Little guy, when was the last time you did an 81-kilometer ride in a group?
In a group? Ooh.
Yeah.
How big does the group have to be? Probably...
That's a 50-mile ride. When was the last time you did a 50-mile ride? Let's start with that.
When was the last time you were up here? No, I did a 50-mile ride last year, but in a group. The last time I probably did a 50-mile ride in a group is when I went out to Afton with you and a couple folks, with Leo and...
Wow.
Couple of folks, yeah.
So you maybe are a little bit closer to what Pogacar did. I mean, he went 50 miles out with the world's best racers behind him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I struggle on a 50-mile ride. I mean, hell, I struggle on a 10-minute ride with my kid around a couple blocks right now. I got to get the act back together. Now, look, I want you to do something. I know that this is a the podcast is a it's an audio medium. I don't know if you knew that, but
I'm aware.
Visually, Have you noticed anything new about my studio, my background?
I do notice something about your background. I was not sure if
how would you describe it? How would you describe it?
Hopefully you're getting a screenshot. I mean, you got a couch behind you. You've got a nice picture of worlds. You've got some skateboards, some helmets, and you have an amazing banner that says Winter 2018, and you just picked it up so I can fully see it. Rainbow Stripes says Alejandro Valverde on there. I wasn't sure what that was referring to when I initially saw it over your shoulder, but where did you get that? Where did you pick that up?
Oh, I smuggled it back from Scotland.
Oh,
there was an old misprint in the Endura factory, so I got the banners that hang above the sewing line of the custom department.
Oh, very cool.
And they made one for Valverde, and I got the scraps on the floor, you know, like 2018. I was like, that is not going in the recycling bin.
Yeah,
I'm bringing that back. And then, you know, customs was like, do you have anything to declare? And I was like, well, I do have a banner to honor the 2018 UCI Cycling World Champion, Alejandro Valverde.
Yeah, sent you straight to jail.
The like, soon to be
bring that much money into the U.S.
Yeah. Yeah. How dare you? So the podcast you and Spencer did last week, it's pretty solid one.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. Didn't really have any massive edits.
Good. I'm glad. I deleted all the files. Okay.
But it, you know, bike racing is finally here.
Yeah.
Pretty excited about that, as I know you are as well. And then there's not like a ton of, you know, it's just good old fashioned bike racing, right? Like, at the end of the day, that's what the love of this was, and why we started this podcast. And to hear you guys talk about it was great joy. But we're in a little bit of the lull, so now there's two more weeks because now we've got Paris-Nice and Torino-Adriatico. So
yeah.
Both solid races.
Solid.
I know that they're fun with the stage race. But classic season is what I'm here for. So we've got about a two-week run to Milan-San Remo. And, you know, I just wanted to say that I'm a little bummed, but I understand why. But our dear friend Luke at Roller Derby has put the Mothballs once again on Roller Derby. But for the last 4 years, it has been out to do almost certainly the world's best fantasy cycling game. It was a parimutuel style gambling on cycling, and it was a lot of fun. And I think what Luke taught me was that I should never gamble on cycling at all. Never won it, oftentimes near last place out of the couple hundred people that played every year. But, you know, now Milan-San Remo, 2 weeks away, so we'll be talking about it when we get there, about the lovely Scarponi Bridge, who's going to be the first over the Poggio,
yep,
and all the fun that's here. But Paris-Nice and Torino are here, and you are the resident expert on Paris-Nice. Filled with the crappy weather at the start, before it gets all the way to the sunny finish in Nice. You've got Remco, we've got Primoz, and we have Mads Pedersen, who got, I believe, what, second or third today on the sprint? How do you feel going in? Like, what are you expecting to see at Paris-Nice this year?
Well, I always like Paris-Nice. You know, I've mentioned before, the last couple days are usually good. You had a good mountain stage in there, and you usually get a crazy last day. Always, like, one of the better days of cycling every year, I feel like. You're right. It's either gorgeous, but you still get lots of good, gorgeous and sunny, and you get lots of crazy attacks on the last day because the field is so close. Or you end up with a day where it rains for the first time in 8 months at the Mediterranean, and the roads turn to ice, and everyone falls down. I'm excited to see the new Primoz. I mean, it's always interesting when big GC guys move teams, especially in their 30s. Are they going to bring the magic with them? wink, wink, cycling.
So sometimes. When do you think the rebrand of the team happens? Do you think they go through this year as Bora Hansgrohe, or do you think they do a full Red Bull-like reskin of the identity and the kit like around the tour?
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, if you were going to rebrand it, that would be the time to do it. So I think we have to wait a little bit. I don't know. I haven't heard any leaks since it so, happened. They've been pretty mum about it. I believe Bora's still hanging on even if it changes title-wise. So
I can't imagine Red Bull's going to have like a co-sponsor on the... Just if you look across their properties, like an F1 and all that, it's not like Team Red Bull / Visma. You know, like I'm just a little like, okay, we'll see if that happens. But I'm more curious, does Wout have to get rid of his helmet?
If they became another team sponsor, I would feel like that would have some sort of conflict. And like,
but Shimano's on everybody's bikes.
That's true. I don't know. Equipment sponsors, I think, are immune from the like thing. I mean, maybe that's a way we can do it. We could get them, and then everyone has to ride a different group. And like, so, the top team rides Shimano, then the second team rides SRAM, and then Campy, and then it's like six teams on various subsidiaries of Microshift. I don't know.
Oh man, there's so much opportunity there for someone to come in as a drivetrain sponsor.
Well, I just want to say one thing I like about the way Paris-Nice started. And in the press a few weeks ago, Vlasov, who was obviously one of the GC guys on Bora last year before Roglic came in, was sort of, rather than just saying Roglic is the man, I'm number two, he was like, well, we'll see. We'll let the road decide sometime this year. And you're like, yeah, Vlasov, you're good, but Roglic is Roglic, you know? But I like that today on the opening stage, just finishing in the same time as the winner, Roglic finished 17th, Vlasov finished 18th. So already the inter-team dynamics seem tight. neither of them giving away anything, I mean, even a second, anything between them. So I think seeing those interpersonal, how they work together. So if Vlasov, like, is willing to work for Roglic, like, man, that's going to be a strong team. If he's going to not... we'll see why Udenbrooks left and went to Visma Lisa, you know, because maybe Vlasov's the problem over there. We'll see.
I'm always in for inter team drama.
Oh, I know you are.
You know, especially So this is going to be great to see. I was trying to bring up the whole like helmet thing because.
Oh, okay, yeah, go roll.
Did you see the grainy photograph of a new Canyon helmet that is missing half a strap? So right, the traditional helmet has a Y yoke that kind of connects below the ear, and then there's two straps, one goes in front of the ear and one goes behind, and then you put your helmets, you put your sunglasses over those straps. Canyon has a new helmet that only has a front strap. Did you see this thing?
I did. I saw this picture. I think it was Vakov who rode for Alpecin and
now,
stuff riding it. I don't understand. To me, just looking at it, it looks like if a gust of wind came in the wrong angle, the helmet would just fall back on your head like a Cat 5 Fred.
Well, I don't know. It attaches to some kind of cradle system. It looks like that there's a little bit higher up. There's like a plastic piece. But what I got to ask you is, Canyon, just known for innovation, right? Tons of innovation.
Yeah, occasionally.
Does this go the way of the double decker bar that Canyon has brought us?
So,
you know, like
looking at it,
is that where the extra weight from the strap is going into the double decker bar to make up for the weight savings?
I think so. The reason it's one strap, I don't understand. It looks like a thicker, and it looks almost like a more rubbery strap, and it almost looks like the adjuster is like there's a Boa dial adjuster under your chin, which maybe sounds like the most uncomfortable thing in the world to me. I don't know why you would want what looks like a more rubbery strap around your, like, as it is, you've got a fabric strap and that's enough. I don't know. I feel like they've both.
So how much money would Canyon have to pay you to be the tester of this helmet?
Well, I don't like paying for helmets, so.
I know, but it's kind of also risky because it's a helmet.
Yeah.
You know, like you're kind of like, ooh, like which one is it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because you were talking about helmets, and have we gotten any lead? Well, you were talking last week about someone wearing your helmet and riding your own bike. and riding down the streets around your house.
I know.
Have we discovered who this little guy imposter is yet?
No, I didn't see him this week, but also I didn't do the school run every day because I was sick all week. And so my sort of route, my general routes were maybe a little changed. My speed was changed. So maybe we just didn't cross paths at our usual spot. So no, I'm sorry. No updates. I was hoping.
Well, we were all hoping. Well, little guy, let's get with this week's international correspondent, Tom Skunes, second place on the podium, to lead us up into the Prem Lab.
I'm Lotte Kopecky, and you're listening to the Slow Ride Podcast.
All right, guys, here we are in the Prem Lab. Let's give a shout out to all listeners and supporters of the Wide Angle Podium Network, especially those that have become sustaining and donating members of the podcast, allow us to continue to bring great independent cycling media content to your earballs. And I want to give a shout out to the Grodio. The Grodio was back with a Bill Shiken and Amanda interview with the rock cobbler winner Chase Wark. Yeah. Now, look, do you know Chase?
I mean, I don't know them. No, I don't.
From Minnesota.
No.
I got to listen to this.
I didn't know that.
And so I'm going to be checking it out, but I saw it come across my podcast feed and I loved it. And many thanks to Bill and Amanda for their continuing support of Gravel Radio as it continues to slay it on Wide Angle Podium Network. So check it out.
Yeah.
All right, Bill. Amanda, thanks for continuing it on. And we will get back to the show.
What up? This is Tom Skoyinch. And you're listening to the Slow Ride Podcast.
All right, here we are. The Slow Ride Podcast email bag is ready. Are you ready to jump on in, little guy?
I'm ready.
Now, the first one comes to us from Ben from Omaha. Hey, Slow Ride Pod. Opening weekend, of course, talking about KBK and Umloop. Left me with a question that I need your insight on. Will Wout give his newly acquired donkey to his son, George? Or will he spare George a lifetime of having to answer, "Where's the donkey, George?" from inquisitive Slow Ride Pod listeners and give it to a kid number two, Jerome?
Ah.
I've attached a picture of Wout holding the donkey for reference and a jumping off point for any investigative work you guys may undertake. Like my pain cave pictures, I'm sure this pic won't make it to Instagram, but at least your listeners have seen Wout on a podium before, unlike my pain cave. Ben from Omaha. So the first thing, little guy, is, are you going to apologize for not posting Ben from Omaha's pain cave pictures to Instagram?
No, I'll try to post them. I'm sorry, and I'll try to do it.
Now, I don't recall seeing Ben's podium or pain cave photos, but he's from Omaha. So knowing that he's from Omaha, I'm assuming there's a giant Bright Eyes poster over his bike.
Yeah.
Maybe a little Saddle Creek Records collection. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some milk crates. What else would be in Omaha? Maybe some aluminum baseball bats in honor of the College World Series.
Oh, I was going to say, I didn't know where you're going with that. I forgot they had the College World Series there, which I shouldn't have forgotten because it was actually happening when I was there last year. So, they got a good science museum that just opened.
You think they've
really
got
rich
a
guy that lives modestly or something, but he's still a rich guy hoarding all his wealth. So that's fun.
He's the Oracle of Omaha. Omaha does have the University of Nebraska, Omaha. It's got a Division I college hockey team.
Okay, good for them.
Impressive.
Good for them.
I don't know what else they've got. Oh, I know what it does. Omaha's got that one congressional district that Sometimes there's like one electoral vote that comes out of it.
Oh yeah, you're right. They have that weird thing. They have, I think UP, Union Pacific is from there. So they have a lot of, they got trains. They got big trains.
A lot of train layups. All right. Well, Ben, the question is, what did Wout do with the donkey? Do you think he gave it to a team like supporter, or do you think he brought it home for his two kids to fight over?
I mean, I hope he brought it home for the kids, and I hope he did the right thing, because obviously Wout's a big fan of the pod, and he gave it to Jerome, so that we don't have to bother little George Van Aert. I assume he named
you definitely don't want to do that.
George after George Hincapie, because he probably grew up a big Hincapie fan, being Belgian.
Oh, you think that that's the... Oh, that's a good one. Like, what did Wout Van Aert... Why did he name his kids George and Jerome? Well, clearly, he named his kid George after Big George Hincapie. But what did he name his kid Jerome?
Jerome Pena or whatever, the guy, the Middling French racer of the aughts. Maybe has.
Are you talking about the guy for like Europe Car?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm looking it up right now. Yeah, he had a pretty mean goatee. Yeah, maybe. Oh, I know what I was going to talk about from last week's podcast. I should have written an email about this. Is that Alaphilippe?
Yes.
Trying to get back on the Alaphilippe train, because
are you in? Are you?
You've
down?
Kind of put me in a little bit of a predicament. Well, you put me in a little bit of a predicament because the you put me in a predicament because Patrick Lefebvre kind of hates him.
Yeah.
And I hate Patrick Lefebvre. So then you're in like, you know, friend of a friend of a friend is the enemy or whatever.
Right.
So maybe. I'm open to it. I need Spencer here to convince, but I know Spencer's not here.
Well,
would it be a faux pas if I nominated Pogacar for the Slow Ride Podcast Championship belt and take it off of Sepp Kuss? Do we have a ruling on if, or do all three, can you have an interim belt?
Interim. I don't know. Champ? I think we have a rule. We all have to vote. I mean, I thought if this comes up every time we try to give it to, you know, the biggest star, like we often end up with this debate.
That's what I'm saying. Like the biggest star, cause it's usually Spencer that says no. So I'm just saying, like, we can kind of,
yeah.
You trying to tell me you don't think Pogacar should get the belt?
Yeah.
Or Lotta Capecchi at this point?
I suppose. I mean, the two winners, it's hard to make an argument against the two winners getting the belt. But sometimes we make the argument, like, it almost feels like it's how we didn't give it to Van de Breggen for a long time, because it felt, or Van Vleuten, even. Yeah, it's Van Vleuten. Of course, she's like one of the greatest ever.
Pogacar rode 50 miles by himself with the world's fastest cyclist trying to chase him down.
Yeah. And did you see the fact that this is the fourth year in a row that he started the season with a win? Like, there's no. A large number of pros that will never win four times in their career. And he starts every year with a win. And you're right, like you said. Yeah, I'm arguing your point for you here. He didn't start with just like a win at some little crit, some local crit.
Yeah.
He won by going
He didn't go to the Tampa, Florida, like training crit, you know. All right. Another email comes to us from Gary Jones. Now, what Gary wrote was subject line looks legit. Then it was a single frame photo of a rail bike, a single stand up rail bike. Little guy, did you see this? And is it your bike?
I did,
or is it Gary's? I don't know. I need to know more.
Yeah, I want to know more. It's not mine. It's not look good. I hope. Yeah, I hope it's his. I want to know more. If he's got more info.
Can I ask, little guy, rail bikes, are they hard to pick up? Like, if you're on the train tracks and you're going, and then suddenly there's like a light at the end of the tunnel, and you quickly realize that the light is coming at you because it's a train.
Yeah.
Can you easily pick up your bike, or is it like locked on the rail?
Well, I mean, I'd like to say 100% no, but since I've never fully gotten mine working and taken it anywhere, and I know I'm really letting the ball drop on this one, I can't say for sure, but it's pretty, the way the setup I have is pretty easy. There's sort of like a handle that locks the front wheel in, and everything else is just on with the weight. So you should be able to just hit this handle and lock the front wheel, boom, take it off in like a second or two.
So here's one for you, little guy. Do you remember a few weeks back when we got an email from Jeff in North Carolina about the corkscrews?
Yes, I do.
The collection of corkscrews that were made out of brake levers.
Yes, those were super cool.
Did you end up buying one just out of
question? I didn't. I can't really justify it. I don't drink. I don't think I drink enough wine.
Now, it looks like 19 of them were sold. When we checked back a few weeks ago, like only one had been sold. So they got the Slow Ride podcast bump. So part of me thinks that, you know, in Murfreesboro, Tennessee too. So like a suburb of Nashville. Now you could get a Campy brake lever corkscrew. You could get Dura-Ace, Suntour, Superb, Super Pro, Zeus, Modelo, Universal, or Weinmann. And you were like, I'm definitely getting the Suntour. Spencer was like, I'm getting the Zeus. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I'll get the Campy. So we got an email from Danielle. Should I read it? I will. Hello, Slow Ride Podcast. Greetings from the city, beautiful Durham, North Carolina. I'm writing in response to your response to my husband Jeff's email about corkscrews. Jeff forwarded me the eBay listing, and full disclosure, I had no idea what it was. I thought it was bike bits, having not examined it very closely at all.
Yeah.
So I was surprised to hear you all discussing a corkscrew. A wine opener? What? Again, I still haven't actually looked at the listing, but you can imagine my concern as your discussion progressed and as you determined that the artisan-crafted brake lever thingamajig was a great value. I was just waiting for you to suggest, no, encourage him to purchase one. Campy, of course. Well, I guess now I know what I have to get him for his upcoming birthday.
Yeah.
And also, we're conveniently located in Durham, North Carolina, just 4 hours south of D.C. We have an extra bike kicking around in the fleet that would be the perfect solution to Rob, forgive me, I haven't had a stroke, commuter bike conundrum.
Oh, okay.
Danielle, well done. Well done here, by the way, Danielle. We got a one-up e-bike for our son at college, and it's currently gathering dust in our garage. It's a perfect blend of lightweight aluminum and a class 2, maybe 3 hub motor. If you're comfortable with the constant feeling of terror and almost dying from the stupid acceleration, it's perfect. Otherwise, maybe I should list it on eBay. Now, Danielle, if you're smart, you could take that bike and maybe barter with the corkscrew manufacturer.
Get like 100 corkscrews or something. The bike's going to cost a lot more money.
So, Danielle, thank you so much for the email. And I would say that Durham is a great town. So that's one. I don't know if Durham is where the Carolina Hurricanes play hockey, but it's definitely around there. It's like in that triangle thing that they talk about. It's
a research triangle.
Pretty sweet town. Research triangle, yeah. I've liked it every time I've gone out to Durham. So, but yeah, I got to say that if Jeff didn't buy that corkscrew made out of brake levers, then someone else did. 19 of them have been sold.
Glad they're selling. I don't drink enough wine, but man, it looked like the person making them was, I feel like, underselling for what you were getting. The weird amount of customization and the work, the workmanship.
Oh, and to charge them all at the same price. Like, that's what's crazy to me.
Yeah.
Like, the Suntour one should be more money because it'd be harder to find.
Well, yeah. You got to do a little, like, or, yeah. A little more work to find some of them. I mean, how many? Maybe you have less people to buy the universals, but I don't know.
Did you guys talk on the podcast last week? I know you talked about Jan Tratnik winning Umloop, but did you talk about him wearing the 3/4 leg warmers?
I don't think we mentioned that. I know we got. I think we got an email about that.
From Nicholas. 3/4 leg warmers. At this point, can't we just call those knee warmers?
Basically, I did like that he won. He also had the neck gaiter on. And I always like these early races.
Huge fan of that.
When the guy,
I think that's a solid look.
The total training ride look. You know, because like, especially in this time of aero is everything. Everyone's doing all these aero gains, like wearing aero socks and all this stuff. But sometimes it's just cold out. And you're going to race faster if you're comfortable. And Trotnik is the clear example. Neck gaiter,
I'm a
three-quarter leg warmers cannot be the most aero setup, but it worked on the day.
I wear the neck gaiter a lot. Oh, I like it. Too. But I also think it's a solid look when I see other people wearing it. It's kind of got the hanky vibes a little bit. Mm-hmm. Perfect. I have a guy I used to ride bikes with here in Orlando that would always perfectly fold a handkerchief. Yes. Like it was almost like it was gang colors coming out of like one of his rear pockets.
Just in case.
But it was always like, you know, like a silver like hanky.
Yeah.
Then you just grab it and like dab the sweat. You're just like, yeah, I'm sure that really helped. It's like Florida in June, you know, like what are we even doing here?
Yeah.
Nerdy Book Corner. Hello, Slow Riders. Medium time listener, first time emailer. You guys host a great show, C-. Little guy, I need to second the recommendation for Longitude.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It was a fascinating read about finding your position using a comparison of known times. I was fortunate enough to see the chronometers in person a few years back at my local maritime museum.
Cool.
I served in the Navy for a number of years, so I've had enjoyed reading maritime-related history and corresponding the material to experiences I have had. If you want a further maritime-related suggestion that does a good job making the reader feel like life on board a ship as an enlisted sailor, then I recommend 2 years Before the Mast. Though it is set in the age of sail, much of the routine in life is still the same. Briefly, I want to say I enjoy professional road racing as much as the next listener, but have come to enjoy cyclocross very much this year.
Yeah.
I see it as the rugby of bike racing, ridiculously challenging and brutal with its obstacles. And I hope Matthew Vanderpool takes a break to the men's races so they become more balanced and competitive next year. Very respectfully, Brian from the city beautiful Westerly, Rhode Island.
All right. Thanks, Brian. Yeah, thanks for seconding the recommendation. It's on my list.
Before the Mast, 2 years Before the Mast, was the recommendation after Longitude. Now, have you read Longitude yet, little guy? I'm trying to remember.
No, I have not. I've not read it yet. No. I got a stack from the library to get through before I get to that. But it sounds right up my alley.
Now, I do not know Brian, but I just want to point out that Brian says that they are from Westerly, Rhode Island, which is in the far, far reaches of Western Rhode Island, on the border of Connecticut.
So like 20, arguably 30 miles away from the eastern side of Rhode Island.
I mean, I think it's almost on the state line. It's on the, it's on the Pawtucket River.
Okay.
Or Powhatchuck River, whatever. But the point is this, is that I'm from Rhode Island. I was born in Rhode Island. And Brian says that they were in the Navy. So I'm curious if they were based in Newport, Rhode Island, which is where I was born.
Yeah.
Overall, great city. So thank you for chiming in from the city beautiful of Westerly, Rhode Island, which it very is, very beautiful. But if it's a few miles west, it'd be in Connecticut.
Then would it even be in New England? It's like so debatable at that point, you know.
All right, the next email comes to us from friend of the pod, Tim Myers. Is it ever too early to hear Bob Roll say Tour de France?
No, I don't think so.
You know, I think that Bob Roll used sparingly around the Tour de France, maybe on the I don't need Bob Roll every day with color commentary, but I think that Bob Roll is perfect for, you know, maybe earlier in the race, maybe a week of coverage. I love Bob Roll. fell in love with cycling a lot because of Bob Rohl. I think Bob Rohl on the panel is fantastic, but I don't need Bob Rohl every single day of the tour.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I don't want to hate on Bob Rohl, but I think, yeah, when he was kind of running third string on those broadcasts back in the day, they'd bring him on for part of the stage or something. That was kind of, you're right, the best way to use Bob Rohl. Bob Rohl's kind of like a hot sauce or just like a tangy sauce you put on your eggs and potatoes or something in the morning. It's delicious. You love it, but you can't have it with every meal, you know? Do you want it on a flat stage, but do you want it in the mountains? It's different, you know?
This next email comes to us from Andrew. Baby shark versus piles of manure. What would drive you away from a race finish? Baby shark blasting at 120 decibels or a bus-sized pile of steaming manure? I personally can handle the smell of manure. Also, I appreciate little guy's stance on the farmers being all whiny about pesticide and herbicide regulations. And of course, this had to do with an email a few weeks back about the farmer protests happening in Western Europe, shutting down bike races, in particular Spain. So little guy, are you a big fan of Baby Shark?
I'm not a big fan. I'm glad that we are out of the Baby Shark era here in my house. How about you?
I am as well. We are on a weird, weird era in music. As much as I try to, like, we have Sirius XM, and I try to get the kids to listen to, like, Marky Ramones, punk rock Blitzkrieg, you know, try to, like, get them excited, or, you know, listen to some Laura Jane Grace on Alt Nation. When we're in the car or on the bike, the bucket bike, they do every now and then, like, request, like, stuff I'm like, oh, okay. Like, they heard the song and they're like, oh, let's sing They Might Be Giants.
Wow. You don't want to listen to They Might Be Giants? Cool. We listen to a lot of They Might Be Giants. I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
They Might Be Giants.
I think it's okay. Nice. But, you know, I don't want my kids to go too soft too quick, you know?
Too soft. Well, I don't enjoy much punk rock, so I'm fine with my kid going soft because I find a lot of it irritating.
I'm trying to get him into the Postal Service because I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm like, oh, this album was really big 20 years ago. You should totally listen to it.
That's the thing. We talked about that. I always feel funny, but, you know, because I'm like, I put something on and I do realize even some newer things, I think of them as being newer. I've had them and I go, oh, man, I've had this for 18 years. And I'm like, you know, you're doing that thing where you're just bringing your kids into your little world, your little old person world, and I quickly flick off the radio and I'm like, ugh, what was that? It's weird. Yeah. It's a weird thing.
Now, it is a very weird thing. Let's get right to it. We got one more email to us. This one is an anonymous email. Dear Slow Ride Pod Boys, longtime podcaster, first time emailer, I love the show. It always brings a smile to my face. I especially enjoy the nuance that each of you brings to the table. Little guy's misguided charm, Tim's comment section level of confidently wrong, and of course Spencer, the glue that holds everything together. By the way, kudos to the incredible lift from Spencer last episode with Tim out and Matt sick. Unbelievable stuff. He deserves a raise. I have a question, and you are the only ones who I can trust to answer it. If you're going to airbrush a super sick wizard on the side of one cool 70s retro conversion van that I obviously used to cart around my 24-inch BMX cruiser and my homemade rail bike, which team logo should appear shimmering in the wizard's crystal ball? Oh, and it can't be Kelme, Lamprey, System U, or Castorama, unfortunately. Thanks, Anonymous Fan.
Anonymous fan. So, wow,
this anonymous fan with strong opinions is asking us which team logo do you put inside the crystal ball of a wizard airbrushed on the side of a 70s conversion van that you no doubt are using to transport your bikes to various trailheads and bike races and bike rides around the country. So little guy, there's a lot to choose from. Now there are some rules that we're not allowed to use the classics, such as Lamprey, Castorama, System U, or Calme. So what do you go with?
I mean, Wizard's Ball, I think the obvious pick is Le Mans, the Le Mans Zed team, because you got that Z Puffin, the little...
Oh, that'd be pretty good.
And that would look good in a Wizard's Crystal Ball. It's not, and it's also ambiguous enough. The cycling fans would get it, and everybody else would just think some sort of Z is a smoky Z is exploding, and you're on some new drug called Z.
Well, do you go the route of a team that is fully gassed up? Do you go the route of Festina watches?
It's kind of ugly, but yeah.
Or just pretty ugly, just sure.
Onsei,
or do you go Phonak?
Phonak.
Do you go Phonak?
I mean,
stage 17.
Kind of funny being that most people that probably own a 70s conversion van airbrush to this point definitely have Phonak in their life in a different way, and they have hearing loss. So, I think that's kind of funny. Because I think the thing is, nobody knows it's a cycling team, right? So then people that know what Phonak is are just other old people. And they're like, oh, that wizard has hearing loss. It's just like a funny joke. They're not remembering, Tyler should have won it that year in Santiago Perez or whatever. I was robbed.
I'm not done yet.
Oh, you're not done. Okay.
Do you go with Gerolsteiner? And it looks like bubbles.
Yeah, it's got a nice good.
Yep. Mineral water, but then you could get pulled over and people asking you for a water. Some stills for some of that sparklies.
Yeah. What, asking you where Bernard Cole is. That's true. That could happen.
Wow. All right.
Deep cut.
Do you go with leaky gas?
Yeah, always a funny one because nobody knows what it is.
Leaky gas could be pretty good. Could get some good laughs on the side of the road. Now, I'm assuming this anonymous email is more of a fan of third-rate French teams like Crédit Agricole or FDJ. While okay, I still don't think that they are what you would put inside the crystal ball. So, little guy, I'm going to ask you again. What team goes inside the ball?
Maybe the Bonjour team, classic early 2000s. Tommy Vokler and has a little cute cartoon of somebody reading a newspaper. Bonjour.
That could actually be a pretty good one. I think I am just gonna go right ahead, and I've got the answer. Of course, is Fossa Bordeleau. Fossa Bordeleau.
It's not so
it would look fantastic.
Enough. It's not exciting enough. It just says Fossa Bordeleau.
It was a wonderful team. You got the nice bubble letters that would go perfectly well on the side of a 70s retro van. And it also brought us Ali Jet, Alejandro Pataki, who dominated professional cycling for 2 years. Thing of beauty.
Till the asthma got the best of him. I don't know how much that inhaler helped. You know, I had a lot of breathing problems this last week, and I took an inhaler one time. It didn't do me any good. So I don't know.
Well, there you go.
I feel like he was set up. That's what I'm saying.
Well, anyways, it's as always, little guy, this has been great enjoyment, and we'd like to thank all of the listeners and supporters of the Wide Angle Podium Network. Make sure you also email us your questions for advice, purchase ideas. If you want to reach out for our P.O. Box mail address, so you can send us some emails. I just got a nice care package from El Rey out of Pensacola, Florida, home of the 309 Punk House and Sluggos. We'd also, so email us at theslowridepodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram @theslowridepod. And with that, this is Tim in the city awesome, Orlando, Florida.
Oh, this is Matt, I guess, just in the boring old city, beautiful Minneapolis. Reminding you to always wave at all the cyclists. See out there on the road.
The Slow Ride Podcast. Bikes, advice, and rumors straight from the source. TheSlowRidePodcast.com and on Twitter at TheSlowRidePod.
There's an elegance to bike racing. For all its technology and engineering, it's a simple question of physics. How do you move a body through space as quickly and efficiently as possible? When the rider and the machine work as one, it's almost as if the solid world has melted away, and all that remains is the spirit, the pure, raw, and unfiltered soul of sport. Life is measured in many units, miles, kilometers, kilos, and pounds. But we measure it one corner at a time. We've entered the golden age of crit racing, the most exciting spectator event in sport, where all of human drama plays out before us on our city streets. On this show, we bring you the news of the day and take you inside the personalities of the teams and riders and right up to the gates of the premier events in the world. Welcome to Criterium Nation.